evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Thursday, May 9, 2024. Seven people suffocated to death in a container at a military barracks in South Sudan.
The bodies are being handed to me, and the bodyguards are not okay. I received them yesterday and buried them in the same place.
And the French medical charity pulls out of Sudan's town of Wad Madani.
The reason why we suspended our operations is mostly because it was not possible anymore for us to work in Wad Madani for two main reasons. Related to the warring parties. On one hand, we were facing constant obstruction.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Seven people suffocated to death after they were locked in a container at a military barracks in Warab State. The state government says the suspects were illegally detained in the military barracks in Kwajok, adding that those responsible for the detention will be held accountable. But James Akech Nyaldeng is a relative of the five deceased, says he's holding the Warab state governor, Kwal Muarmuar, accountable for allegedly killing five of his relatives.
What we are doing now, we need to finish 3 days, and after 3 days we will sit together. But we need to open the case against the governor, because we need to know why the governor killed our people and what is behind this thing. Five people cannot be killed for nothing.
Based on my understanding of South Sudan's laws, the arresting power is with the police. Yeah. Why was the police not involved in this case?
That is my question now, because we know in the world, you know, any case of killing or any crime to happen to the community is used to be taken by police. But police are not involved. This is a military. And this military belongs to the governor. The governor used the power and used the military to arrest the innocent people.
The Minister of Information in Warab State, that's Wol Mayombol, issued a statement saying that they have arrested the officers who were in charge at the time when the detainees were brought, and they are going to charge them in a court of law.
Yes. No, anyone told me about that. Yes, I want to finish 3 days, like what I'm telling you, that will be there in Fajor to meet the Minister of Information and meet the whole shareholders who are there in the government. He told me exactly why these things happened and why they took my children to the military. And military killed the people, innocent people.
The Minister of Information issued a statement saying they are sad about what happened. They did not know that these boys were kept at a military detention. They say that was illegal, but you're still pushing, saying that you want to press charges against them.
Yes, what I'm doing now, my suggestion is, if the government take the action for these people who are doing this, I will don't have any problem. But what I know, there is something behind this, because military cannot be taking people without information from the governor and without information from the police. Even CID, they don't know. And just took the people and killed them. That is why I say this one is I'm going to open case against the governor.
James, you are operating in an environment where the judiciary or the courts are under the influence of the person you want to accuse.
There is a procedure can be taken. Even the president of the country will be accountable by the law. The country have a law.
The suspects were kept in the military barrack. I saw some pictures and they were not looking really good. Were the bodies handed over to you?
The bodies have been handed to me yesterday on this time. And these people are killed for 3 days. And the bodies are complete pointless, are not okay. I received them yesterday and buried them in the same place.
After the burial, you're telling me you want to take 3 days to mourn your loved ones. And after that, you are going to start a legal procedure against the governor. Why would you accuse the governor? Was the governor the one who arrested them?
No, the people who are being arrested. If I heard that the people who are arrested, I don't have any problem with the governor. The reason I said I want to open the case to the government, with the governor, because I don't hear anything about people. When four people are killed and one person has been shot dead, five people from one mom and one father. I didn't hear anything about the action of the governor. I hear everybody is silent. And I said, okay, if those people are killed like this, mean the governor is behind it. Because should arrest the people who are criminal, who are killing the innocent people.
That's James Akech Nyal Deng, a relative of five of the detainees who suffocated to death after they were locked in a container at a military barracks in Kwajok. He spoke to me from Akwach Payam of Tonchnot County yesterday. This program made several calls to the governor of Warap State, but he did not return our calls. We also called Wol Mayombol, the Minister of Information in Warap State. He did not return our calls. MSF, the French medical charity, Doctors Without Borders, known by the acronym MSF, has suspended its operations in Al Jazeera state capital, Wad Madani. MSF says growing insecurity, denial of travel permits for its new staff, and medical supplies are being looted and harassed by security forces, forced them to halt their operation. MSF's deputy emergency manager, Morel Bruchier, spoke with my colleague Nabil Biagio from Spain earlier today.
The reason why we suspended our operations is mostly because it was not possible anymore for us to work in Wad Madani for two main reasons related to the warring parties. On one hand, we were facing constant obstruction for the access to Wad Madani, so it's an area that is 136 kilometers southeast of Khartoum. And to travel there, we need authorizations from the authorities that were constantly denied and didn't allow for our teams to enter the area. So we were unable to replace our teams, who ended up being completely exhausted. The second thing we couldn't enter is obviously the medical supply, which is essential to run hospital activities. So without teams and without supply, well, it was not possible for us to keep functioning. But the other very important reason is also because, as you may know, since December, the area has been conquered by the rapid support forces. And we have been also facing constant violation of the neutrality of the hospital and of the medical mission within the Wad Madani teaching hospital. This translates into looting, stealing of our cars, harassment of our staff, detention of our staff. So it was not possible for us also on the ground to run our operations in a secure way without exposing our teams and the patients of the health facilities to these violations of the medical mission. So this has forced us to take this difficult decision, and that's why we decided to suspend the activity until we receive further guarantees from the warring parties to be able to possibly resume at some point.
I know Madani Teaching Hospital is very important, is actually playing a critical role in this war zone in Sudan, in Al Jazeera state. Tell me about the importance of that.
Well, Al Jazeera state is, Wad Madani was one of the major cities in the Sudan. It used to host a high number of displaced people from the early stages of the war that fled mostly Khartoum. But when it fell under the rapid support forces, the displaced people displaced further south. But there are still hundreds of thousands of people living in this city, and they rely on one single fully functional hospital, which is the Wad Madani Teaching Hospital. So, well, it is essential because already this population is facing tremendous challenges, well, facing a war situation with ongoing violence, access difficulties to healthcare, and a lot of economic instability and difficulties. And on the top of that, now they are going to be deprived from a functional hospital. Well, obviously, the Ministry of Health staff is going to try his best to maintain the hospital running, but without supply and without the support we were, the incentives and the salary support we were providing to the Ministry of Health staff is going to be very difficult.
So this was the only functioning hospital that hundreds of thousands of people can access in Al Jazeera. And as you mentioned, Al Jazeera is not just for the inhabitants of Al Jazeera. It became a humanitarian hub since Khartoum was destroyed in the early months of the war. Can you just tell me a little bit more about the humanitarian consequences of your withdrawal?
So, well, the direct consequence of our withdrawal is the dysfunctionality of the Wad Madani teaching hospital. So when we first arrived, most of the Ministry of Health staff had fled the area, and there were only around 20 Ministry of Health staff within the facility. As we leave, there were 240 staff that we were supporting with incentives. So this means these staff are not going to be paid anymore and might also not remain within the facility. Obviously, as well, Wad Madani is the breeding basket for Sudan, and the situation in the state is affecting the nutritional situation in the whole rest of the country. That is already a high health concern for us. So that's also, I mean, that's, of course, our exit doesn't contribute to that, but will not allow to treat patients for suffering from malnutrition, patients suffering for malaria, from the women, pregnant women willing to looking for a safe space where to deliver, and of course victims of violence looking for health care who need immediate treatment to be able to survive or to and to be treated.
That's Morel Bourchier, MSF Deputy Emergency Manager in Sudan. She spoke with my colleague Nabil Biagio from Spain earlier today. An initiative to bring South Sudan's holdout groups that refused to sign the 2018 peace agreement kicked off today in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. President Salva Kiir, on several occasions, pledged to bring lasting peace to South Sudan by talking to the non-signatories of the revitalized peace agreement for the resolution of conflict in South Sudan. The talks with the holdout group started in Rome by the community of St. Gideon. Earlier this year, President Salva Kiir asked the Kenyan President William Ruto to bring the holdout groups for talks in Nairobi. Kenyan President William Ruto, in his remarks today, told both the government and the holdout groups to negotiate in what he called spirit of brotherhood to bring lasting peace to the people of South Sudan. The rebels of the National Salvation Front, under the leadership of General Thomas Cirilo, boycotted the talks in Nairobi. We will continue to bring updates on the negotiations on Friday and moving on. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a South Sudanese American says he's going to be the next president of South Sudan. Find out how after this break.
Oh, listener of South Sudan in Focus, we have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The European Union in South Sudan is celebrating Europe Day in Juba by sharing European cultures through cinema. The deputy head of delegation of the EU mission in South Sudan says Europe Day celebration should remind South Sudanese about the importance of national peace and unity. Juliana Shepai reports for VOA from the South Sudanese capital, Juba.
Europe Day is marked on May 9th every year to celebrate peace and unity in Europe. Lothar Yashke, deputy head of the delegation of the European Union in Juba, says the South Sudanese have suffered and the time has come for change through cultural diversity. A key step, he says, will be the high-level mediation for South Sudan being launched Thursday in Nairobi. The talks bring the groups that have signed the revitalized peace agreement for the resolution of conflict in South Sudan with the groups that haven't signed it.
Nobody is interested to go back to violence, to war, and to use the violence again. I think there are other better solutions to get legitimacy, to move to democracy, trying to bring together. Now you have the... It will be on Friday, the Nairobi process will start on the 10th of May. There will be a launch trying to bring on board also the non-signatories who have not yet signed up to the peace agreement. It's a very laudable process which we do full-heartedly support. And this is the time, the time for fighting, for struggle is over.
This year, to mark Europe Day, the EU is working with the Juba Film Festival to screen movies about gender-based violence, issues in communities, and the danger of war. Joyce John Thomas, managing director of the film festival, says the support from EU allow filmmakers in South Sudan to showcase their work.
This collaboration of EU films, we are glad to be part of it because we also want our filmmakers to come and, you know, see their films, the production, the stories from different Europe countries, and they learn some technical experience because this is what really in South Sudan we need to improve on that. That's why, you know, we are running for the workshop every year to make sure we have at least basic, you know, basic ideas about a film in terms of technical.
George Moga, an information and technology specialist, says he enjoyed the South Sudanese and the European films during the cinema week.
It was a good experience, you know, though we lack the facilitation and some of the facilities that we need to make it a very, you know, very vivid industry. We're still growing, we're still moving on. So I like the experience, the stories that our filmmakers were telling. They are so real. So we'll look forward to, you know, joining hands together and making this industry grow and become even bigger in the future.
The European Union says it supports the implementation of the 2018 peace agreement by funding institutions for legal reforms and public financial management, among others. Its 208 million euros multi-annual inductive program for South Sudan aims to help build a green and resilient economy, to support human development, education and health, and to encourage good governance, peace and rule of law. For VOA News, I am Juliana Shiapai in Juba.
From Juba, we move back to Studio 14 with Bol Dengai, a South Sudanese American who says he is going to be the next president of South Sudan. Deng is here and he's going to tell us how he'll become the president of South Sudan without following proper procedures laid out by South Sudan's Political Parties Act and the Electoral Commission. Then, welcome to the Studio 14. My first question to you is, you've been telling people in America that you are the next president of South Sudan. That's a very strong statement. How are you going to become a president when you don't have a party that is registered? When I did my own research, the Kush Democratic Party is not a registered entity in South Sudan. And based on my knowledge, you are the only member of your party. How are you going to become a president?
Thank you for having me. And also, my name is Bol Gaideng.
Yes, sorry for that. It's Bol Gaideng. I'm just calling you with your last name.
Okay. My name is Bol Gaideng. Thank you so much. I've been very much campaigning since 2018.
Where are you campaigning? Campaigning yes. where? Yes. On yes. Facebook or no. from your apartment in Richmond?
No, I've been in South Sudan actually before. Actually, I've been in South Sudan in 2013 when war broke out. And very much we did a lot in humanitarian.
What did you do? Let's be specific.
Well, we send the medical supplies to South Sudan.
Where the medical supplies sent? Which towns?
We send them through, actually, Uganda and Kenya.
But which towns in South Sudan? Because
they went to Jubo.
I covered the war. The roads to Uganda were closed. It was not easy to go to Uganda.
No, they were flying to Jubo, by the way. I want to tell you that in 2012.
But Jubo Airport was closed during the crisis.
No, 2012, not 2013. I'm talking about 2012 here.
Mm-hmm.
And was received, they were facilitated by the former Minister of Finance, Kwala Ten Mayen, in Kenya, Nairobi.
Mm.
And we sent the medical, and then medical disappeared in Juba. They never reached to the right people at the time. But I want to let you know that I've been complaining. I very much escaped more than two or three assassination attempts in Kenya by Nigerian security, by Kalkor himself. I was in Kenya.
Yeah,
I was in Kenya.
If
I was
you don't
Uganda.
Give me time to ask you questions, we're not going to have a good conversation here.
2012, 2018.
You are making a very serious allegation here that you are being assassinated. Why would people assassinate you?
In Uganda.
Why?
Why? Because I'm a candidate. He'll know that I'm a threat to his leadership.
Well, based on my research here, there are rules of game. Mm. Every game has a rule.
Okay.
The rules for being a candidate in South Sudan's elections is that, number one, you should have a registered entity that is based in Juba. There is no office for Kush Democratic Party in Juba.
Right.
And here, you are saying you want to be a candidate. Right. Secondly, you are supposed to have 500 members in each of the 10 states, including the three administrative areas. To the best of my knowledge, you are the only member of your party. How are you going to become a president?
Can I tell you something? Let me tell you something. Are you talking about what legitimacy do Kiir have that create the genocide that killed more than 500,000 South Sudanese? What legitimacy of the party?
I don't speak on behalf of the government of South Sudan.
We have a grassroots
team.
We
are talking about your party. That is not my vote. You said you want to become the president.
My political party have a grassroots in South Sudan across the 10 states. I want to tell you that right now. I cannot mention that name, but we have...
Why? You want to become a president? No. Why would you hide your...
You have seen how many lost life in South Sudan under the night security. You know what do we talk about? You know very well how dangerous the national security is in South Sudan.
If you're fearing national security, how will you become a president?
I'm not fearing. I'm fearing the life of my supporters, but I am not fearing about
and
my
how
life.
How are they going to vote for you when they are fearing for their own lives?
No. Look, let me tell you. We are planning to go to South Sudan. Election has been called now. It was not election at the time, but election has been called in December.
Let me fact check you. It's not even clear whether South Sudan will go for elections.
It got to have election.
Because of the conditions.
No, it got to have election. We have to have election. We have to demand it.
How?
We have to be demand. Because people are dying.
South Sudan, which place in South Sudan? 75%
of South are living under the humanitarian aid by the United Nations.
Fair to your point. But when you're saying people are dying in South Sudan,
We have about 4.5 million refugees in East Africa, Uganda and Kenya and DRC plus the Ethiopia. Have you, Salva Kiir, ever visited them?
I don't speak for the government of South Sudan.
Yes, I'm now challenging the government of South Sudan to do something on these citizens who are dying day and night. And they never done anything about it. We believe we have to demand election, and now election has been demanded, and election will take place in December 2024, and that's why we are pushing the international community to demand that election, and we are pushing on that. We've been writing letters. We are having our meetings. We are pushing it. United Nations is pushing. The member of CRECAS now, US, is pushing, and the UK and Norway. Also, the African Union is pushing. We are actually getting there now. And people are saying, we have a different phase of leadership, not Yagma Shara and Kira.
Now, were you part of the recent meeting where the political parties met? Let me talk.
Okay.
The political parties met to dialogue and see if it's possible to have elections, given, one, the economic situation of the country, two, logistics, three, some key areas in the peace agreement have not been fulfilled. And they are saying they are looking forward, but you are here beating your chest that you are going for election. How?
Are you talking about the peace that does not benefit the people, women and children of South Sudan? You talk about peace that the power controller, Riek Machar and Kiir, can be in power. That the peace you're talking about?
How can you have elections in an environment that is not conducive?
Look,
how?
Election have been done in various countries that have a situation of South Sudan is in now. It was done in Liberia. Charles Taylor was bought out in 2003 by Bush administration support that election. In DRC in 2019, Joseph Kabila, it was actually bought out because it was supported by international community. We believe this situation we have in South Sudan now is a time for people of South Sudan and they want to support the women and children of South Sudan so they can have a new leadership. And we believe in that. And that's why we are very determined that election has been called now. We will be in the ground. Also, let me get back to your question about the political parties. Do you know the political parties are demanding $50,000?
It's not the political parties. Let me fact check you.
Okay,
it is the
election commission.
The political parties council is saying that if you want to be registered, you pay a provisional fee of $25,000 and then registration fee of $50,000, which the parties have said this is too much and they are not going to accept.
Okay.
Now, I still want to, hold you to account. Where is your party located in Juba?
Located?
Yeah.
I will not give you the name of my location.
Why?
But I have my grassroots team. And I'm gonna be in South Sudan in this year. And
you know why?
And you know why? And you know why?
Yeah,
you know why? My people are mobile in Juba. Look, there's no way that I can win an election without people. I believe my party has enough supporters to win election in December 2020.
But the actual truth is that you're the only member of your party.
No,
that
I have so many members. I have members. I have members across the world, around the world.
Who is claiming that he's going to become the president of South Sudan.
I have members around the world, including South Sudan.
Now, if you are interrupting me, then you're not being fair.
Go ahead.
How are you going to become a president when you're not even allowing me to ask you questions?
I'm trying to answer your question back.
We have to be...
That I don't have members and I have members.
Well, the best of my knowledge, and a lot of South Sudanese who are listening to us know that you are the only member of your political party. That's all we prepared for you this evening. And I'm your host, John Tanza. With me in the studio here was Bol Dengai, who is a South Sudanese American.
My name is not Guy Dengai. My name is Bol Guy
Dengai. We now leave you with Aisha by Khalid.
Come see, je n'existe pas. Elle est passée à côté de moi. Sans un regard, reine de Saba. J'ai dit Aïcha, prends tout est pour toi. Voici les perles, les bijoux. Aussi,
we've been listening to Khalid Aisha and the song Aisha. I'm your host, John Tanza, here in Washington in Studio 14. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Shadrach, we wish you a lovely evening. And remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. We'll be right back.